Welcome to the Working Capital Real Estate Podcast. My name is Jesse Vergali, and on this show, we discuss all things real estate with investors and experts in a variety of industries that impact real estate. Whether you're looking at your first investment or raising your first fund, join me and let's build that portfolio one square foot at a time. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to Working Capital, the Real Estate Podcast. We have a tremendous show for you today. I interviewed Mr. Jordan Harbinger, and if you don't know who that is, you might be living under a rock, but he is the creator of the Jordan Harbinger Show, which receives 6 million downloads every month and was awarded Apple's Best of 2018, which makes it, I believe at that time, the most downloaded show of the year. The mission of the show is to help you become a better informed critical thinker. We talked about a wide array of things. Jordan's incredible. You should definitely check him out. He has interviewed such a crazy Rolodex of people, ranging from people like Malcolm Gladwell to the late Kobe Bryant. Just a tremendous guy in general. So this week, we're changing it up a little. Not so much about real estate. So if anybody's interested in self-development, whether that's taking your business to the next level or just your interpersonal relationships, this is a great episode and hope you enjoy. Ladies and gentlemen, I have Mr. Jordan Harbinger on the show today. Jordan, how are you doing today?
Thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
So aside from kind of the intro I just went through here, you know, we talked, I believe, about 2 months ago, just in regard to, you know, the podcast that you have and, you know, how long I've been listening to it. And part of that was, you know, discussing how long you've been in the space. It seems like you've been in the space, you know, before it was quote unquote cool. And yeah. Just to kind of go over some of the names that, you know, I've seen on the show over the years, I'll just list out a couple here because it really is amazing. Some of the ones I thought were memorable for me, you know, you had Malcolm Gladwell on, Jack Owillick, Dennis Rodman, Kobe Bryant, Dr. Drew, Simon Sinek, and one of my favorite, Neil deGrasse Tyson. So, I mean, that's an amazing Rolodex, and you could just, in researching this, you could just go on this list. So maybe for the listeners that if for some reason they don't know who you are or your podcast, you could kind of back up a little and talk about how you kind of got into the space originally and how that, you know, 12, 13 year journey has been, you know, over time.
Sure. So I originally got in the space because I was a Wall Street attorney. And I was realizing pretty quickly that everybody on Wall Street was pretty smart and a hard worker. And that had all, one of those two things had always been my competitive advantage. You know, it was always like, oh, I cannot work everyone because they're all drinking in college. So I, you know, I'm the only one who's going to study for 16 hours a day, or not the only one, one of the only ones is going to study for 16 hours a day. So I was able to outwork them. But, you know, once you get to Wall Street and everyone's working 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, 16 hours a day, 7 days a week, whatever it is, you realize, ooh, the window for me to be able to outwork people is pretty slim. And a lot of these people are have more natural talent or are better able to focus for long periods of time, that kind of thing. So I was really, really careful. And I realized I'm probably going to get fired at some point, right? They're going to go, why is this guy here? He's the weak link. You know, once the market slows down, whatever, I'm going to be one of the first to go. So I wanted to find another competitive advantage. And what I learned from one of the partners was that the competitive advantage he had was that he was bringing in business for the firm. And I thought, I need to learn how to do that. So of course I asked him and his advice is like, oh, just be cool. You know, like get to know as many people as you can. And I thought, if I could just be cool, do you think I'd have gone to law school? And no, I would have done something else. You know, just be cool is like non-actionable advice that I would have done in first grade if I'd had the ability to do so. So that didn't work. And then I realized, you know, I'm not really going to get any further with this unless I really focus at it. So I started taking those like Dale Carnegie classes where they're like, hey, you know, this is how you memorize people's names and look them in the eye and have a firm handshake. And I took those and they were okay, but I realized, you know, if somebody doesn't give me $1 million law deal, is it because I didn't have a firm handshake? Is it because I didn't look them in the eye for 3.5 seconds? Or, you know, what is it? That's not really the case. That's stuff you tell people that are so remedial that they're afraid to like introduce themselves in a group of 12 or stand up in front of a room and do a little talk. I wasn't at that point. I was further along than that in my career, so to speak. And that to me meant that I had to start from the basics. So I started really backing up the truck and devouring psychology and influence and persuasion and reading things that were building blocks. Like Cialdini's book, Robert Cialdini's book about influence and persuasion, yeah. Taking courses from places where I'm not even supposed to necessarily be taking the class, like some class for police officers about how they handle informants and interrogation and all that stuff. And, you know, trying to sort of get into those types of situations. That stuff was really, really useful for me because I realized pretty quickly that if somebody didn't give me $1 million law deal, like if a Goldman Sachs investment banker wasn't tossing my firm $1 million law deal, it probably wasn't because I didn't have a firm handshake, and it certainly wasn't because of something some guy in a sweater vest at the YMCA told me about. It was because there were building blocks and other things that were missing that I really needed to work on. So starting from the ground up, I started working on that, and I started to teach those skills to my fellow lawyers at law school before I even graduated, because I'd done an internship at the Wall Street firm, and that's where I got the idea that I was in deep doo-doo. So I started teaching these to lawyers, thinking, like, this is so key. We need these skills. All the professors say we need the networking skills. You know, let's figure out how to teach this, and everybody else will be better prepared as well. So I started to do that, and nobody cared at all except for a small group of women. And I was wondering why that was for a long time. And as it turned out, guys, or male lawyers, I should say, at my school at that particular time, because I don't want to throw everyone into a bucket, they were saying essentially some version of, I don't really need this. I'm just going to work hard. And I know that if I work hard, I'll make partner. And then I don't have to worry about this networking thing. But a lot of the women were like, this is kind of a boys club and I need to learn everything I can. And they didn't have an ego around learning these skills. So I started teaching a lot of the female law students these skills. And there were guys there, but it was like a 10-to-1 ratio. And then I said, look, if it's just going to be you and I, all these women and myself, why don't we just do this at a bar? Because half the time we go to the room where I'm supposed to teach this class and the door's locked and we got to walk around and we got to go to a Starbucks. We got three tables that are wide, too far apart, and teaching the class, you know, it's just a huge pain. I said, let's just go to a bar. Bars are not that crowded around 4 p.m. Or 5 p.m., you know, in a college town. Well, it depends.
Yeah.
We didn't go to the Irish pub. We went to the fancier ones that nobody went to except for the grown-ups. And I started teaching there. And then guys would say, hey, man, I see you here with like 20 women 5 nights a week. What's going on? And I'm like, oh, I'm teaching a networking class. Great. So these guys started rolling around. And then the conversation started to turn to dating and relationships because that's what a lot of the people were really interested in. And it just inevitably went there because we were talking about body language, nonverbal communication, eye contact, all kinds of different things. So people were like, well, how do I use this for this, not just stuff at work? Mm-hmm. So that evolved into me having the same conversation or a similar conversation over and over and over again. And I started burning them to CD, the conversations, recording them and burning them to CD, because someone new would show up on Wednesday and I'd have to repeat Monday, Tuesday in brief. And everyone else is like, oh, man, you should have showed up earlier. You'd have got this. And then finally, one of the people was like, you know what? Why don't you put these files on the internet? And I thought, that's a good idea. There's really no way to do that right now. And a couple of months later, my buddy who had suggested this said, you know, there's this new thing called podcasting. And you can upload an MP3 file and then put it in iTunes. And people can download it and sync it to their iPod. And I thought, that's a really good idea. That way, when people say, hey, tell me what you were talking about before, we can point them to this really basic WordPress website and we're good to go. And that was a really promising idea. So we did that. We didn't think it was going to turn into like a show and a livelihood and a training company. We just thought this is a really good way for us to put something online that we don't have to, so I don't have to carry CDs in my pocket anymore. And you know, that was a big deal. Because that actually turned out to be the genesis of what is now the Jordan Harbinger Show. And we, man, that was 2006.
That's crazy.
So it was just such an early sort of serendipitous dip dive into this pool. And I thought, well, I'm going to be a lawyer. I'm not really going to be doing this. But I just enjoyed the show so much that I kept doing it. And when I moved to New York and worked on Wall Street after law school, I was moonlighting on Sirius XM satellite radio doing this same show, you know, and yeah. It was just a hell of a lot of fun. I mean, it became a career, and I realized I sort of almost missed my calling by going to law school and doing this. Like, if I had to do it over again, I'd probably just would have gone to broadcasting school and been done with it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, there's a couple things there. First, you know, you just give me the image of looking at my CD case in high school where you just see it ripped CDs with Pearl Jam and various artists on. So that takes me back a bit. You know, the second thing too is, you know, working in commercial real estate, I've seen the same thing with, you know, the boys club and how you do see some of the guys just like, oh, work hard and everything will work itself out. Sometimes that's the case. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes it's not. But you said something, I don't know if it was a recent podcast, and it talked a little bit about creating a podcast and kind of doing it as a side hustle. And I thought it was interesting that, you know, we're now in this space and kind of during this lockdown, and I started a podcast after doing videos as a contributor for the Bigger Pockets. And I found the same thing. People would ask me the same things over and over again. And I found that, you know, the podcast, I got to talk to interesting people. I learned just as much as the audience learned. So I started it during, I started releasing episode during coronavirus, and it was probably a week in. So people just assume like, oh, Jesse, you know, during coronavirus, he just started a podcast. And what they didn't see was, no, that was like 10, 15 episodes banked. I started this, you know, months ago. And that's specifically on one of the shows you talked about how a lot of people, and this isn't just in podcasting, don't really look at, you know, they look at, I want to have this podcast, but they don't look at all of the, you know, what it takes, the, you know, whether it's the equipment, figuring out how you're going to upload. And what would you say to people that, you know, they get those ideas, but then there's no execution on it. You just don't realize how much it takes. And then, you know, oftentimes these things fizzle out. I think there was some stat where how many times a podcast gets abandoned, and that's oftentimes like any projects that we do in our lives. So, you know, what can you do to that if you do have something you think it's special to kind of see it through and, you know, take it to fruition?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, you have to find something you truly enjoy, because there's only so much hammering the square peg through the round hole that you can do. That said, I'm a planner in many ways. In some ways I'm not, which, like, in ridiculous ways I'm not, where I'll be like flying by the seat of my pants from some things and people are like, you're insane. But then other things where a lot of people would never plan, I probably tend to overplan. So I'll throw this out there. But I will say that the majority of what there's a reason people say, Jordan, you get more done in a week than most people do in a month. Mm. And it's because I plan my day in 15-minute blocks. I use apps like Todoist to track tasks. So I never have to spend cognitive bandwidth being like, what was that thing I was going to do? It's always like, boom, this is what's scheduled for right now. This is what's getting done right now. And then I'll have a block that just says to-dos or tasks, and it'll be an hour or two long. And then I've got 20 things I got to do in Todoist, and I knock down as many as possible. So I'm not that person that has 800 backed up emails, because I do 30 or 40 a day, depending on the day, and they're blocked off. So the time is there, because what a lot of people do that I notice is they go, oh yeah, I've got to do that tomorrow. And they put all this stuff in there and they have like work 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Work? What do you mean work? What are you going to do? They spend a bunch of time looking around. They procrastinate on something else. They decide to dive into a project. Then that part gets hard. Then they go eat lunch. They come back and they go, oh, I got some email. Oh, I don't want to answer most of these. So they skip those. They go to the easy emails. The other ones back up along with the other 400 that are in there. And then one day they're like stuck at an airport lounge and they go, oh, I guess I'll go through my email. And they spend 3 hours doing that. And it's a painful process and they hate it. And they can't wait to never do it again. And then 3-4 months go by and then they have to rinse and repeat that whole process. I don't have that. You know, I do 10 of those starred, hard ass, annoying project-based emails every day. I do 20, 30 fan mails every day. I do 20, 30 LinkedIn messages every day. And people are like, doesn't that take time? It sure does, but it takes a hell of a lot less time and frustration than trying to spend an entire Saturday clearing out your inbox, because there's opportunities in there that you've missed and that are expired. And now you look like an idiot because you haven't responded to somebody 3 or 4 times for this other thing that you asked them for. And now, you know, like, you have to be really careful about that. So consistency for me and forming good habits has been crucial. And people will say, like, how did you build a show to the size 6 million downloads a month inside of a year after you left your other one? And it's, one, it's creating good content, but two, it's making sure that they eat the elephant one bite at a time, where most people are thinking, Like I've seen to-do lists that have things on it that say like write book. Yeah. I mean, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
That's like a multi-year long project and it's a bullet point on a to-do list and you haven't reserved any time for it. If it's on my calendar, it gets done. And if it's not on my calendar, it doesn't get done unless something weird happens. Like, you know, I got an interview with you and you say, hey, I'm stuck in traffic. I got a punt. I'm at an airport lounge stuck in tarmac. Great. I've got an extra 30 minutes of time. I'll probably just dive into my tasks though for that day, not just wander around the internet aimlessly. Like everything has to get planned and done at a certain time. And the beauty of this is when you plan that stuff and then you decide to punt on something or put something else in there, you only have so many hours in the day visibly represented on that calendar. Mm-hmm. So if you say, oh, I'm on a phone call and it's going to be 15 minutes, but it lasts half an hour, you have to adjust that time slot because otherwise you're not going to be able to push everything else. And eventually it pushes things down. And what it does is it teaches you to stop procrastinating on a lot of things, because if you move that half hour phone call, you don't just say, I'll do it later. You go click, drag, and you go, oh shoot, now I'm working till 10:30 PM.
Yeah.
Or, oh, I'll just do it tomorrow. Cool. Drag it over to tomorrow. Oh, I don't have any free time tomorrow. I can't do this. So then you start to teach yourself, do it when you say you're going to do it or don't do it at all. And that does two things. One, it gets you to do what you say you're going to do. And two, it gets you to say no to a hell of a lot of things you should be saying no to. You know, I used to say yes to everything. And then it was like, oops, I didn't get any work done this week because I'm on 78 other shows and flying here to give a talk for peanuts. And then I'm doing this charity thing over there. And then I said yes to lunch with four people that I don't really need to be having lunch with. You know, I hear about this a lot. So saying no has been really useful, but it's really hard when you think about it. It's easier when you go, I literally can't do this.
Yeah.
You know, you throw your hands in the air and you go, I literally don't even have time next week to have lunch. I can't say yes. And you feel less guilty because you're not just blowing someone off. You look at your calendar and you go,
I can't do it. Yeah.
Doesn't fit.
Yeah. I've heard relatively recently somebody saying, you know, just the term, I don't have the capacity right now. I've seen in kind of our business that people that are just very, very, it's very difficult for them to say no. And kind of getting over that when you're right, there's a situation where you should say no. But this kind of concept, I always see this dichotomy between, you know, people that say, you know, you're a slave to your calendar, or people that are over planners, you don't live life loosely, or, you know, and that's seen in a negative light, where I see the flip side. And like yourself, I'm very much a planner and goal setter that I see it completely the opposite, that once I do kind of make plans like this, it does free me up to do the things that I really care about doing, as opposed to the things that I know I shouldn't be doing.
It's true. Instead of saying I don't have time, when that might be what you mean, you can also say I'm not going to prioritize that. I'm not telling you to say to your friends like
you're not a
I
priority.
Don't have priority.
Yeah,
you're not a priority. You could say I don't really have time, or I don't have capacity for that. But when you're saying something to yourself, you have to be really careful not to lie to yourself, because a lot of times you'll say, oh, I just don't have time to keep up with my friends. Well, you do. You just chose to make a lot of time doing. I mean, we all have friends like this, or maybe we don't, but I certainly do or did. I've got friends who I haven't seen in forever. And I go, what are you doing? And they're like, I'm so busy. I'm so busy. I'm so busy. And I go, yeah, I understand that. But then I look on their social media and I'm like, this guy's posted 12 times this week, and everything was about a new series they watched on Hulu and Quibi and Netflix. So they have time. They just deprioritize their social life in exchange for television. Is this the type of person I actually want in my life? They clearly don't really value my friendship that much. It's not like their job is in TV, you know, or worse, you get a contractor working for you or an employee working for you, and I just don't have time, working so hard. I don't have time to get this done. Sorry, this project's taken a month when it should have taken 3 days. And you go, And then again, you look at their social media or something like that and you see, I see. You're caught up on
just nonsense.
13 different serials, but you're just not getting it done. I know what work from home looks like for you. So you have to be very careful about how you do this for yourself. Because I know a lot of people that would lie to themselves, and I used to be one of them, where you just, I don't have time. How do people do it? I don't know, there's not enough hours in the day. And then somebody told me, track when you start work, stop work, and put everything on a calendar. And it was like, wake up at 9:30 because I'm 29 and that's still not totally ridiculous. Get up, mosey around, check some social media, go to the gym, come back, shower up. Oh, it's lunchtime. Eat lunch, do a couple hours of work, feel really guilty about it. Do a couple more hours of work. Maybe if you're lucky, it's 5 o'clock. My friends are calling me. They want to go do something. Oh man, I never really did that much work yesterday. I only got 3-4 hours of work in. Rinse and repeat. But then you look at average productivity of an employee, and it's like most people get like 5 hours of things done per day. I get like 10.
Yeah.
And that's because everything's planned out and I don't allow for distraction and I set my lifestyle environment up to avoid it. I don't have a TV running in the background. I'm not checking email mindlessly. You know, I don't post on social media or check it mindlessly. It's always scheduled. And when that clock runs out, it's done.
Well, you probably get pushback too when you ask somebody, you know, go ahead and track it. You know, most times you know, the average person doesn't want to track things for fear of actually figuring out what that will reveal. And I think that goes for working out, that goes for diet.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, diet for sure is one that a lot of people don't want to do.
I don't want to know.
Yeah, I don't want to know. And people go, here's the common objection I get with time. They go, oh, well, I only have like 2 things tomorrow. I mean, I can keep that up here. I have a call at 3 and I have a call at 4. It's really easy. Yeah. And you go, wait. You have a call at 3, you have a call at 4. Those are your 2 meetings tomorrow. But what are you going to do in the morning? I'm just going to work on stuff. Well, wait, what the hell does that mean? And so whenever I've whenever I help people sort of figure this stuff out, I'm like, what does your work day really look like? And it's usually some variation of get up whenever, go to the gym whenever, eat whenever, check some email, check some social media, maybe eventually stop procrastinating, dive into a project, hit the first tiniest bit of resistance for that project, find another distraction, pat self on back for doing 6 hours of work that day, even though you didn't do jack to move your project forward, and then go, how do people get so much done?
Yeah.
And I see this with even professionals. Like I see it even with like doctors will do this and they're like, I'm so behind. How are you behind? You're a professional. You have no excuse at all to be behind on certain things. And now that I have a 10-month-old, I'm like, okay, people with kids, it's harder, but it's still very doable, very possible. Some of this, I think, comes from me being an attorney and having to bill in 6-minute increments.
Yeah.
You don't have the luxury of going, I'm not sure what happened between 1 and 2 p.m. Guess I did some work. What do you mean you did some work? For which client? What were you doing? Is it in the software? If not, guess who's not getting paid for it, which means no bonus. You know, like, no. I know you can look at my calendar from when I was an attorney and you can find out when I took a leak.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what? It's a good segue. I'm just being mindful of the time here, but just a segue into kind of the environment we're in right now, where if somebody says, I don't have the time, it's kind of like, dude, you know, we're all shut down and you told me that you got laid off last week or, you know, so this time right now, I'm just curious what your thoughts are. First of all, if the people that you talk to right now, if you're finding this has been a challenging time for productivity, and secondly, more about kind of the toolkit of getting work done. You know, I've always liked kind of the sprints, the Pomodoro type of style of doing a 25-minute sprint, 30-minute sprint, depending on the task at hand. But what would you say is kind of the toolkit during this time that you've found that's most effective for most people?
You know, it's tough because there are a lot of people that do like the Pomodoro technique where you work for 20 minutes or something like that. I am okay just booking an hour-long slot to do stuff because I think I'm maybe a little bit more, I don't know if it's focused, but I certainly have a lot more energy than I think a lot of people do. Mm-hmm. Some of that is for sure because I'm so used to working at home. I mean, right now, a lot of people are going through it at home and they're like, how do people focus? And I feel for those people because I've been working from home for 13, 14 years now.
Yeah.
And I, like I said before, I certainly was not like, oh, work from home, easy peasy. It took me like 2 years to be remotely productive from home. Before that, I think I kind of just dicked around a bunch. Like I said, go to the gym, eat lunch, do whatever. I think you really should plan things out. If an hour is too long, do that Tabata or whatever you call it, you know, Pomodoro. Set the 20-minute timer, take a 10-minute break. Yeah. If you have like focus issues, it's all good. The question is only what works for you. Like, I know that's a cliche, but there's so many people that just can't decide on a productivity strategy. So they're kicking the can down the road with it. I like to book my day out in 15-minute blocks. That doesn't mean every appointment is 15 minutes. It means that every 15-minute slot is booked. There's not like random gaps in there. That's worked for me. If you want to book half an hour and 20 minutes of that is the task and 10 minutes of that is the work, great. But like you said, you really need to, keep it timed, because I could tell you from experience, it's very, very easy, to go ahead and say, I'm going to take a 10-minute break. And then you kind of shake it off a few minutes later and you go, what time is it? Oh, I lost half an hour in YouTube rabbit holes. You got to use the timer and be really, really careful with it. If you have to have your calendar pop up those little reminders every time a new appointment comes about, then fine. You know, do that. Set 20-minute appointments every half hour. And then when the little thing pops up that says break, drop your pen or whatever. You just have to find a system and stick with it and be consistent. And that's easier said than done, but it comes with practice, and you're never going to get it if you're one of those people who's only trying to do it when they think they need it. I know a lot of people that go, oh yeah, on days where I really need to focus, then I plan everything out.
Yeah.
Cool. How's that working for you? That's like the marathon runner who goes, I haven't been training, but when the marathon comes, that's when I'm really just going to run.
Like, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me know how you fare, buddy.
For sure. Well, we just have a couple minutes here. I kind of wanted to end off with, you know, you've like I said at the kind of the top of the hour, you've interviewed so many amazing people, and I'd just love to kind of hear your thoughts on, does anybody or any couple stick out as the most memorable, you know, over this over 10-year career in podcasting?
You know, there's been a lot of really good ones, but I think Kobe was pretty good. Kobe Bryant, Howie Mandel was interesting. Mike Rowe is always fun. Malcolm Gladwell, Frank Abagnale, who is the inspiration for the movie Catch Me If You Can. He's really, that guy's really something interesting. Robert Greene, the author, 48 Laws of Power, really, really solid. I've got a lot of pretty fun people. Not all celebrities. A lot of them are scientists. But I, you know, if I just mentioned somebody a scientist, nobody's ever heard of.
Unless he's Neil deGrasse Tyson, and everybody's like, oh yeah, that guy.
Right, then Neil deGrasse Tyson, sure. Yeah. But like a lot of the people, I had an art forger on who never got caught.
Oh yeah, that's right. That was really interesting.
Super interesting guy. I mean, what's funny about him was, I got a letter from somebody with the same last name, but she was African American and he's like an older white gentleman. And I said, oh, how interesting. You have the same last name as one of the guests I had on the show. And she goes, oh, really? It's a really rare last name.
Oh, no.
I'm going to search her site and check it out. And she checks the site and she goes, that's my dad. He adopted me when I was young. Oh, wow. And I said, well, your dad's an art forger and he never got caught. And she's like, I kind of knew, but I kind of didn't know.
I thought you were going to say he was impersonating her name or he stole her identity. I'm like,
No, that would have been something extra. No. He just happened to adopt this young lady. Well, she was a baby at the time from, I think, like Ghana.
Wow.
And she's like, I knew my dad was an artist and I knew he had done some shady sort of stuff, but I never heard him tell the story. And I was like, congrats. So it was really kind of a cool small world moment, because what are the odds when you're an art forger and you don't do any media that some random podcaster gives an interview for you and your daughter just happens to be a fan of the show? What are the odds of that?
That's incredible, man. Well, listen, Jordan, I really appreciate you coming on today. You know, maybe we could just leave off with, you know, telling maybe about what's next for Jordan Harbinger or the Jordan Harbinger Show. And I assume people can reach you by typing your name into Google. We don't have to go through anyways, there'll be links in the show notes. But yeah, in terms of what's next for the show or next for yourself, I know I believe you're learning Mandarin right now, still during COVID.
I've been learning Mandarin for 7 years. I love it. It keeps my brain sharp or plastic or whatever the analogy is here. I also am going to be investing heavily in show growth, which is something I've never really been able to do, which is really cool, really exciting to grow the podcast in a way that's a little bit more predictable than just going on shows and being like, hopefully that works. I have a 10-month-old baby, so that's keeping everybody pretty busy.
Yeah,
and we're building a house. So like those are some personal updates, but they also blend into the business, because of course the new house is going to have a new studio and we've got some great guests lined up and things like that. But right now we have 6 million downloads a month, and I'm hoping that by the end of the year, or at least by the end of maybe next year, we're approaching closer to 10. So it's going to be tricky, but look, that's what business is. And for me, I just love the process. I love the conversations. And I hope that people who listen to you are primed to check out the Jordan Harbinger Show, because I'd love to hear what they think.
My guest today has been Jordan Harbinger. Jordan, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Working Capital Podcast. My goal is to help individuals break into real estate investing, as well as educate experienced investors. If you enjoyed the show, please share with a friend, subscribe, and give us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us. If you have any questions, want to learn more, or would like me to cover a specific topic on the show, please reach out to me via Instagram at jforgals or head to www.jessevergalli.com. My name is Jesse Vergalli, and I'll see you back here for the next episode of the Working Capital Real Estate Podcast.